Welcome back, and I'm going to pick up right where we left off, speaking about hiding, and how hiding fundamentally makes it impossible for us to have intimate relationships with people. I want to share a hiding equation. It's a simple equation that can help you remember this concept very easily. We're familiar with a game called hide and seek. Well, here's the equation. Hiding equals seeking. As long as we hide, we will need to seek out relationships because we cannot be in a relationship while we're hiding, and we will always, therefore, have a lifetime employment of seeking relationships. However, showing up equals finding. When we show our true selves, as terrifying as that is, we suddenly find relationships wherever we go. So hiding equals seeking, showing up equals finding. If you continuously hide from the people around you in the subtle ways we discussed, you will continuously be seeking close relationships. Why? Because you can't be close when you're repeatedly hiding. If you continuously work on showing up in your relationships, you will continuously be finding close relationships everywhere. This concept is so powerful, it's far more powerful than the greatest charisma. Charismatic people can draw others to them, but unless they are truly showing up, their relationships will be shallow and short-lived. This is the reason why when we hear a speaker speak and they share a vulnerable part of themselves, we feel much more connected to them. This is because they are willing to show up far more than others who speak. Vulnerability is scary. It's scary because we're terrified of what people will think if they see the true us. The reality is that this is what so inspires everyone. When someone shows the courage of showing their true selves, this course will be teaching you how to take slow steps into your vulnerability while watching the enormous benefits that we gain when we show ourselves. This also requires us to understand the crushing effects of continuously hiding. The opposite of hiding is exposure and vulnerability. And relationships thrive on vulnerability, and they wither when hiding. Here are the key behaviors which we classically use to hide. Pay close attention to identify which of these you use most. This module's exercise will be helping us learn to notice when we're using them. And this is vitally important, to be aware of what we're doing, as we did in last module's exercise. Once we become aware of what we're doing, in module number 3 and on, we're going to start working with our awareness of what we're aware of to actually create transformation. The first very common behavior is lying. And in fact, this is an umbrella behavior. The one umbrella behavior that is that in some way incorporates all other hiding behaviors is lying. Because hiding is a form of lying, of not showing our true selves. Lying is really another way of saying hiding. It's trying to hide the true reality behind a false reality. Why do we lie? We lie because we are concerned the other person will not accept us if they know the truth. So we lie. I can still remember the day that my mother came downstairs in our home and saw the glass of a picture frame that was shattered. She wanted to know who broke it. We all denied it. In fact, I was the one who broke it. Why did I lie? To stay in good favor with my mother. I was creating a false reality to stay in good favor with my mother. This is an example of a blatant lie. And this goes back to the examples we've used in the past. When I say I'm going to be home in 15 minutes, when I know I'm not going to be home for at least a half hour, that lie is to remain in good behavior. Another behavior, exaggerating and minimizing. Very often, the way we hide is more subtle than explicit lying. And that's why your reaction may have been, I never lie. And I hope that was your reaction, right? But what we're going to see is that there are very subtle ways that we at least give a different impression. And that's what minimizing and exaggerating does. In fact, it's so subtle that we often don't consider it lying. At best, we call it a white lie. An example of our subtle lying is when we exaggerate or minimize. Have you ever found yourself exaggerating an accomplishment or minimizing a failure? The reason why we do this is simply to make ourselves look just a little bit better. This is because we measure our value and self-worth by what we do, not by who we are. And so I desperately want to look better in your eyes. This creates the fear that others won't accept us or find us worthy. So we hide by presenting things differently than the way they actually are. Imagine they asked how many people attended your workshop. And you said 40 people were there when there were only 30 people. Why did you need to add an additional 10 people? Or we report that we made $5,000 from the deal when we only made $4,000. Why the need to add $1,000? Or we got it because they gave it to us at a steep discount, when the discount was only 5%, not steep at all. So why do we say a steep discount? We often dismiss these subtleties as insignificant or not making any difference. It's not a big deal. You know, we just make nothing of it. We were just rounding off numbers and not being particular. We actually do this with a very deliberate and clear intention to make us look better. And we need to recognize this and become aware of it. Another behavior is flattering. Another example that we use of hiding is when we flatter someone else. Here's the definition of flattering: excessive and insincere praise, especially that given to further one's own interests. That definition says it all. We heap praise upon other people, flattering them with the hope that they will now like us. We all know how we feel when someone thinks highly of us and praises us. It feels great. Again, this may be very subtle. However, in our fear of falling out of favor with someone or maintaining their favor, we offer them lots of praise, which in this context is really flattery. The only reason why we would need to flatter someone is because of our desperate need to have their acceptance and approval. And for many people, this is a core principle in their approach to relationships: heaping flattery and not dealing with reality. Another behavior, seeking praise. Is there anyone in your life who you hate disappointing? Why? You feel great every time you earn their praise. Yes, many are raised this way, and we often go through our entire lives seeking the praise of certain individuals. We replace our inherent awareness of our self-worth with the praise of others to confirm our worth. Our decisions develop around what they want us to do, not what we should be doing. Seeking praise can actually turn into an addiction of sorts. We become addicted to getting praise from other people. Let's take a look at gratitude and thanks, which are forms of praise. Have you ever given someone a beautiful gift and was later upset that they didn't give you an appropriate thank you? Why did you give them the gift? Was it for them, or was it for you to hear from them how much they appreciate it? Ideally, a gift is meant for the other person. When we have expectations of thanks, our expectation is a clear indication that we are creating a transaction where we are expecting to receive what we need, appreciation, in return for giving them the gift. Now, while it may be very true that a person should always express thanks after receiving a gift, and someone who does not express thanks is lacking in good manner, this is an issue that they have. When it becomes our issue, and we become self-righteous about this, it's because we are seeking something. Remember, our first focus is ourselves. We will discuss how to deal with others towards the end of the course. What's important for ourselves is that when we get upset about it, it's clearly because we need that thank you. And we do need such a thank you when we live our lives beginning without, because we're relying on the outside, the other person, for our worthiness. Now, you may be thinking, look, when someone does something which is so socially wrong, my sense of good conscience gets upset. It's actually a sign of how decent of a person I am. Let me ask you this. When I give someone a gift and they don't thank me, why don't you get upset about it? Why do you only get upset when it happens to you? I hope you get my point. This is not about our sense of conscience. This is a lot deeper than our sense of conscience. It's about our desperation to know we are worthy and valuable. Here's another behavior, respect. There are some people who must receive respect. When they are not respected, they are reminded of their own sense that they are unworthy. We get angry when someone disrespects us. Again, there are times when respect is due, no question about it. However, that's the responsibility of the other person to give respect at the appropriate times. When I'm not respected and I get angry about it, in other words, I don't deal with it calmly, but I get angry about it, clearly I am very dependent on it. Now, you may say, no, my sense of justice tells me to be upset when people don't act properly. I hear you, and I want you to know that our anger is not coming from our sense of justice. We know this from the fact that when others are disrespected, we don't get nearly as upset. We only get upset when we are disrespected. This is because we are desperately relying on others to get our sense of worthiness. Again, later in the course, I'm going to discuss how the appropriate way to deal with assisting another person in doing what they should, because that's what's necessary to be done. But the moment we're getting angry about it, it is clear, as we will learn later on, that it's about our own worthiness and not about a context we're trying to create, which is healthy. Another behavior is power. Some people are not so gentle. They use power to force others to recognize and affirm them. Instead of learning to gain their worthiness from within, they use their power to get it from without by forcing it. They use power to deflect from focusing on their own issue by imposing on others. This is what controlling people do. You probably know some controlling people in your life, as we all do, and this is exactly the way they're living. They use power to impose that you demonstrate their worthiness. Of course, it's quite ridiculous for me to force you to tell me I'm worthy. But in our desperation, like the drowning person, we actually do that. A teacher can do this, and a parent can do this. Sometimes a very unhealthy person will use their anger to intimidate their spouse to serve or care for them, which makes them feel worthy. There's another behavior, apologizing. Sometimes we simply want to minimize the criticism and lack of acceptance that we are feeling from another person. And in our desperation to have their acceptance, we want to minimize their disappointment with us or their criticism. And the way we do that is by pacifying them, always agreeing with them and apologizing for things that are not our fault. Again, this is all done to stay in favor with the other person so that we can feel loved and accepted and worthy. Okay, here's a biggie, major classic, victimhood. This is another very classic way of acquiring a sense of acceptance, and that's by making ourselves a victim. This is huge. We blame those around us for our plight in the hopes that they will now feel bad for us and tell us how wonderful we are or shower us with love to make us feel better. And that was one of the examples I used before. I can never say anything right. We make ourselves the victim. And in fact, every time we blame someone for something, that's what we're doing. We're making ourselves a victim of them. And it can be effective to get the other person to feel bad for us. And so we feel that we have fallen back in favor with them. Again, we are doing everything possible in our desperation to get someone to tell us that we are acceptable, while knowing, at least subconsciously, that if we have to make ourselves a victim to get their acceptance, clearly they don't truly accept us. All of the above behaviors are in relation to other people. There are many behaviors that we act out in relation to things, which we hope will give us a sense of worthiness as well. We may pursue money with the belief that when we have X amount of dollars, people will respect us. We may dress in a particular manner with the belief that now that we look this way, people will love us, or at least tell me how beautiful I am. If I score well on my test, if I win a sports contest, if I own a certain type of a car, or if I earn a certain degree, these can all be things that we use with the hopes of gaining a sense of worthiness and acceptance from without, from those things. I hope that by now you can see how our need to feel worthy and acceptable can lead us towards all different types of very unhealthy behaviors. Arguably, it is what leads us to all of our negative behaviors. And the common denominator with them all is that we are relying on people or things outside of us to give us our worthiness.